From the newsroom of PCJ Radio International, this is Focus Asia Pacific. I'm Keith Perron. Well, as you probably are aware, there are elections taking place in France. There was the first election that was held last weekend. And the two that have come out on top that will be facing the final runoff in 2 weeks' time are Emmanuel Macron and Marine Le Pen. Now, this, of course, is far away from the Pacific. In the race for the French presidency, the man who got the least votes in New Caledonia is the favorite to win the top job. Emmanuel Macron obtained less than 13% of the French territory's vote in the first round of voting, the lowest score of any electorate. He now will face Marine Le Pen in a runoff. Sally Rowne asked the news editor, Walter Zeifeld, how the result can be explained.
The political divide in New Caledonia usually runs along the line of being pro or anti-independence, and local parties express their preferences of French candidates with that concept in mind. New Caledonia's traditionally fervently centre-right, as the anti-independence camp in general regards the Republicans as guarantors of the continued presence of the French state and that way of the status quo. This means that the traditional way of doing politics called for the endorsement of François Fillon of the Republicans, who of all candidates won most votes with just over 31%.
Now François Fillon is out of contention and calling on his supporters to back Emmanuel Macron. Will that work?
It's hard to say. Mr. Fillon wasn't the New Caledonians' first choice in last year's primaries. That was Nicolas Sarkozy. Emmanuel Macron had been a minister in a socialist government, and New Caledonia's right has difficulty coming to terms with the dramatic change in French politics. As we know, Mr. Macron had his worst result in New Caledonia.
And what's his support like?
Well, 2 days before the weekend vote, the mayor of Nouméa, Sonia Lagarde, shocked the local establishment by siding with Mr. Macron, which was a move away from Mr. Fillon. Now there is a further split in what used to be the Republicans' family in New Caledonia, as for many, Marine Le Pen's nationalist policies appear to be the best guarantee that France will stay. New Caledonia's right is struggling to commit with the decision, and some leaders are yet to make up their mind.
And how much support can Ms. Le Pen expect?
Well, against the background of an anti-Macron sentiment, she may keep doing well. In last weekend's vote, she was only narrowly beaten by Mr. Fillon and secured top spot in many Nouméa suburbs. There is every chance that she will win New Caledonia in 2 weeks.
And what about the pro-independence side? Many stayed away in the last round.
Well, the pro-independence side is unlikely to support Ms. Le Pen. In last weekend's first round, many CANACs didn't vote because one major party advised its supporters not to involve themselves. The party which favoured voting asked its backers to support the socialist candidate Benoît Hamon, and he subsequently came first along much of the West Coast and in the Loyalty Islands. But we know that Mr. Hamon missed out badly in mainland France.
And what do we know about next year's independence referendum in New Caledonia?
Well, nothing points to any delay or change of the Nouméa Accord, which has been the roadmap since 1998. Ms. Le Pen has explicitly said she will honour its terms. This is not to say that there could be a rethink under either Mr. Macron or Mrs. Le Pen because of pressures from New Caledonian leaders.
Two senior Vanuatu politicians will walk free from prison on Friday after serving half of their sentences for corruption. The MPs are among 14 jailed in 2015, a quarter of the country's parliament. Jamie Tahana reports.
At 10 o'clock on Friday morning, the gates of a prison in Port Vila swung open and out walked former Prime Minister Serge Vahoua and a former MP Stephen Kalsakau. A journalist in Port Vila, Evelyn Tor, says the men emerged to be greeted by a small crowd.
There were a few family members waiting outside the entrance of the prison. A few supporters and members of their political party. They went out, escorted by the current leader of opposition.
Ms. Tor says Mr. Vahoua and Mr. Kalsakau only spoke briefly before being whisked off to meet supporters and then hit up a kava bar. The pair are the first of 14 MPs who were jailed for their part in a bribery ring in 2015 to be granted parole. The conviction and jailing of half the then government marked a spectacular few months in Vanuatu, one which sparked a political crisis that saw the president dissolve parliament and call a snap election. 18 months on, most of the MPs have served half their sentences, and the parole board has received applications from 11 others seeking parole, which will be assessed in the near future. Another former Prime Minister, Moana Kakases, who was found to be the leader of the bribery ring, will be eligible in October. But Ms. Toa says there are mixed feelings around the capital about whether the former MPs should be released early. The chair of Vanuatu Women Against Crime and Corruption, Jenny Ligo, says she personally feels justice has been served.
Vanuatu have seen justice done, and the 14 MPs have served their time. They have learned their lessons. They have gone through a lot of crisis. In this case, justice has been done.
Jenny Ligo says while they may be released, the politicians still have to abide by the conditions of their parole, and they are prohibited from standing for public office until 2025. Their saga is far from over too, as the public prosecutor is still weighing whether to appeal against a court's decision this month to drop their convictions for conspiracy. At the time of the snap election in January 2016, which saw a new coalition government formed, there was optimism that the episode would have started a new, cleaner chapter in Vanuatu politics. But Ms. Ligo says while lessons have been learned, corruption still permeates many layers of public life.
I'm looking at a big picture. The cultural environment, to me, it has not changed much. While they're in prison, there are some doing it outside. There are many other things, like we want to see people prosecuted.
Jenny Ligo says a lot more work needs to be done to increase transparency and stamp out corruption in Vanuatu. This is Jamie Tahana.
Fiji heads towards elections next year with new players in the opposition and voters still recovering from the devastation of Cyclone Winston. Sotapa's new leader, Setaventi Rabuka, and the defection of Pio Takulandura from the governing Fiji First to the National Federation Party are among changes in the political landscape. Another major change is the move of the former NFP president, Tupu Dranualu, to a new political grouping, HOPE, which is in the process of seeking registration. A scholar of Fiji politics, Vijay Naidu, told Sally Round the changes may erode indigenous Fijian support for Frank Bainimarama's Fiji First, which won a landslide victory in 2014.
In the case of Pio Tukunduandua, he comes from Tailevu province. He's a person of standing in that province. And likewise, Trambuka has got a big influence in the north, in the Kandove province. And so it's likely, you know, more ethnic Fijians would be voting for these two parties in contrast to the situation in 2014. See, one of the sort of problems that the opposition does have is that fragmentation of political parties will, in a kind of way, give seats to Fiji First. So the system of open list nationwide constituency electoral arrangement suits the bigger parties. In the case of HOPE Party, depending on the candidates they are able to find to stand for them, and that of course includes Tupu Dranualu, you know, voters will then have to decide, you know, whether or not they'd like to vote for particular candidates. Perhaps it's too late in the day for HOPE to have a kind of Fiji-wide impact, you know, that's my view. Someone like Tupu would draw strong support from her province. She has influence and backing from people in her own province.
So a key to victory in the next election is who's going to be able to garner the most indigenous voters?
Certainly, that would be an important dimension of the voting arrangement. I have not seen an ethnic breakdown of voters, but in terms of population, indigenous Fijians now account for nearly 60% of the population, and therefore, you know, if that is transferred into the electorate list, then they would have a very significant role in influencing the outcomes of the election.
What sort of impact do you think the recovery of from Cyclone Winston is going to have in the way people vote?
That's a kind of, $64,000 question. You see, on the one hand, there are people who suffered from the destructive impacts of the cyclone, and they have been very grateful for government action. But at the same time, too, there are a whole lot of people who have not got the support. There are still people living in tents, in Megdu shelters. There are still children attending tent schools. You know, one sitting here in Suva really can't say what will move the voters, you know. Both dimensions of cyclone relief action and non-action have taken place.
So depending on the numbers, depending on the proportion, who's happy, who's not happy, this could be crucial for who wins.
That's right. And also the campaign strategy used by other political parties, you know, because at the end of the day, if these other political parties are able to say that the Fiji First government had failed them, that the Fiji First government could have done better by doing this or the other, then, the campaigning would be quite critical. The way the media is able to get voters on the side of government is critical. And the Fiji TV, the Fiji radio station, the Fiji Sun newspaper, they never tire of, putting the Prime Minister and the Attorney General's images out on, the media platforms on a daily basis. I think the media will play an important role. It is likely that the majority media with a pro-government positions will actually be more influential in the 2018 general election. And one of the things that our research showed in the 2014 general election, the opposition parties did not use social media as well as the Fiji First Party. And so that would be another very important sort of avenue of getting the messages out to the voters.
A couple whose baby died after being stillborn at the Fiji Maternity Hospital have posted a video of staff abusing them online. It sparked further debate about Fiji's health services. Sarah Viotalutu reports.
Mithun Permal and his wife, Vishakini Lata, turned to local newspapers and social media to vent their frustration over the way their daughter's stillbirth was handled. They say they didn't hear from medical staff for over an hour after their daughter was born at Lautoka Hospital. They then had a verbal confrontation with staff and filmed them screaming at the father.
But when she came here yesterday, what was she saying?
Right now, out! Right now, get out! Before I get stupid.
A family friend, Pratika Kumar, says this sort of behaviour is widespread.
All the departments of hospitals in Nandi are suffering the same problem. All the patients are always complaining. The nurses are not familiar, they are not nice with us. Whenever we are questioned or whenever we take anybody in emergency, their behaviour is very rude to us.
Doctors in Fiji, RNZ International spoke to, who did not wish to be named, said the health system was struggling and as a result patients were suffering. They pointed to tight budgets and staffing, inadequate infrastructure and a lack of resources. One said patient care is dire because of the government's lack of investment in health. But the Secretary of Fiji's Medical Association, Alipate Vakamothea, says Fiji is doing quite well on the global scale.
We're doing pretty well compared to all the other developing countries. To give you an example, there's a recent case where we had a neonatal death. But when you stand back and look at the statistics, like the world statistics, I think it's something like 1.5%, and Fiji's is like 1%. So we're doing pretty well.
Hospital horror stories have been appearing more frequently in the local media as well as on social media, including reports of pregnant women lying in hallways because of a shortage of space. Dr. Vakamothea says there are many factors involved which may not see the light of day.
And unfortunately for us as doctors in the medical profession, we're unable to reveal those factors without jeopardizing confidentiality with the patient. So it's always going to be a one-sided discussion, and that's always going to be something difficult to defend against.
The Health Minister, Rosie Akbar, told nurses at their AGM recently she'd heard reports of nurses who were rude, abrupt or unhelpful. She asked them to be mindful of Fiji's commitment to global development goals, including promises to improve healthcare.
I do not want you to form a view that I'm unfairly criticising you. I've already said you do a wonderful work, but these gaps need to be addressed, ladies and gentlemen. Otherwise, we will continue to be plagued by this negativity that is suddenly taking the ministry by storm. Okay? So I fully acknowledge the wonderful that you do, and your work is smiling examples of proud profession that you are, and that is why it's important for us to work together. And we do not allow occasional lapses to damage or distort our reputation.
The ministry is reported to be investigating the actions of midwives involved in the stillbirth case at Lautoka. This is Sarah Vuitelatu.
10 women are among a record number of candidates nominated to stand for new six common roll seats in next month's election. The provisional rolls release on Friday shows three of the remaining seats going uncontested. Indira Stewart reports from Niu.
24 candidates are down to contest six nationally elected Commonwealth seats. The Electoral Commission released a provisional list of candidates for the 20-seat Parliament on Friday, and candidates have until this Thursday to confirm. The other seats represent the 14 villages of Niue, but only 11 of those villages have more than one candidate wishing to stand. Vainga Tukuitonga is the current MP for Alofi Tokelau and has been in Parliament for 17 years. She's hoping to see new faces in Parliament this year.
I hope that there will be new members in the House, new blood in the House. We have very intelligent people here in Niue. The women, they are well educated. There are more women in departments than men. So I am encouraging all the young ones, this is the time to come forward, be counted.
Rosalind Hipper, known locally as Pinky, is running for the first time and is one of the 10 female candidates vying for the Commonwealth seats. She wants young people to have a stronger voice in Parliament.
Younger generation have ideas that majority of the time is never taken seriously by the older people who are in politics. A lot of decision-making and always by the elder generation. The young people's voices are not actually heard a lot.
MPs' annual salaries have recently been doubled to about NZD$32,000. Bill Vakaafi Motufo'ou, who's been the MP for the village of Mutalau for 18 years, hopes the rise will make a difference.
That's the very reason why we fought hard to raise our pay, is to encourage young people to move into politics and don't use the income as an excuse to stay out of politics.
Women have never held more than 15% or three of the 20 seats. Vainga Tukuitonga says that's mainly because women don't often vote for women. She says the parliament needs more balance.
It makes a little bit of difference with all the men in the house. You are able to put through the thoughts of women. You know, women has different things that they think would be better for the country. And debating in the house with the men, respecting them.
Mr. Vakaafi Motufo'ou says he'd also like to see more women voted in.
Somehow men get blamed for not having enough women in politics, but I look at it this way. There are more women on Niue than men. So why aren't they voting themselves in and stop blaming us men?
Niue's Premier, Sir Toke Talangi, says he'd like to see MPs' salaries increased further.
I'd like to see it go up to about 50,000. I don't think that's large, but I need to generate revenue to enable me to do that. And I think we're almost partly there with that. The second thing I want to do is increase public servants' pay to 80% of what you get in New Zealand.
The elections will take place on the 6th of May in Niue, Indira Stewart.
Australia has been labelled a rogue state by lawyers troubled by the pending deportation of a Manus Island asylum seeker from Papua New Guinea. Azam El-Kashek committed self-harm to avoid being sent back to Lebanon, where he says his life and his family will be in danger if he returns. Ben Robertson-Drawbridge reports.
Exactly 1 year since the PNG Supreme Court ruled the detention of asylum seekers was unconstitutional, refugee advocates say Azam El-Sheikh could be deported on Wednesday. A spokesman for the Australian Lawyers Alliance, the barrister Greg Barnes, says Australia will be breaking international law by deporting him.
Australia has an obligation under the United Nations conventions in relation to refugees, not to return a person to a situation where they may be tortured or subjected to cruel and unusual punishment or face the risk of death. There's also a broader right that individuals have not to be forcibly deported in circumstances where there is a high likelihood that those individuals will suffer immeasurably on their return.
The Australian Department of Immigration and Border Protection says the government of PNG has decided asylum seekers found not to be refugees must depart. But Greg Barnes says the refugee determination process on Manus Island was deeply flawed. He says a recent report by the Australian Senate supports his conclusion that the decision to deport Mr. El-Sheikh is Australia's.
The Australian government has been beastly careless for a number of years now about the rights of individuals that it deports. It's yet another example of how Australia, for the last two decades, has become a rogue state when it comes to the treatment of refugees and when it comes to the treatment of asylum seekers and deportation.
The first two attempts to move Azam El-Sheikh from Manus to Port Moresby were thwarted by the asylum seekers' physical resistance and acts of self-harm. Badly injured, Mr. El-Sheikh was tossed into a police cell, where he went on hunger strike and appealed for clemency from the Australian government on YouTube. The Refugee Action Collective's Margaret Sinclair says Mr. El-Sheikh was in no condition to resist the third attempt.
There was maybe a couple of dozen different security forces escorting Azam onto the plane, and by that stage, because he had 12 days of hunger strike and a number of injuries, he couldn't make any resistance. It's a very strange thing to have people in jail when they haven't been charged with any offences. That was actually the basis of the Papua New Guinea court decision. Detaining people in a jail without charge contravenes the constitution of Papua New Guinea.
Margaret Sinclair says Mr. El-Sheikh has been in Port Moresby's Bomana prison since April the 11th and has not been given access to a lawyer or treatment for a suspected broken ankle and broken ribs. The Manus Island detainee, Naji, has been in contact with Mr. El-Sheikh and says his friend has been left in prison to rot.
His health is getting worse, and especially his foot. He hasn't got any medicine yet, and still without showering and in the same clothing since they took him from here. The doctor in the prison says he needs hospital, and I think a couple of days ago the Red Cross has visited him and they wanted to take him to hospital, but they couldn't. I don't know what happened there. All I can say about Azam is he will be in danger if they send him back by force.
The refugee advocate Margaret Sinclair says it would be unethical for any airline to transport Azam El-Sheikh out of Papua New Guinea. This is Ben Robinson-Drawbridge.
Pacific people are being urged to keep developing kava's economic potential beyond traditional ceremonies and kava bars. Kava is often consumed during special occasions and social gatherings, but more non-Pacific people are using kava bar to sleep and a way to relax or to de-stress. Its reputation is still recovering after a controversial research linking it to liver toxicity led to bans and restrictions in Europe. Sarah Viotulu attended the Kava workshop and filed this report.
Kava's economic potential is still hugely underdeveloped. That's according to director of the Kava House Limited, a Tongan distributor who says kava can be made more innovative and creative to appeal to a wide range of markets. Kaloa Hau says Tongans laughed at him when he first developed a micronized kava product where the crop's coarse fibres are removed to leave a smooth, fine texture and a taste far more palatable. He says obstacles like quality controls, its preparation and its taste doesn't appeal to everyone.
I see the people outside of our community, and one of the things that we need to kind of talk about is seeing Gava's potential beyond the cover ball, because it's huge potential. And because we don't see the potential, we have other people outside of South Pacific that are innovating cover products and we're missing out.
Kaloa House says he knows of overseas companies trying to develop innovative kava products, but that it would be much better for Pacific people to develop their own ones first. He says some of the new products proving popular include new sweets and drinks.
We also have micronized flavoured kava. They come in berry, vanilla, cappuccino and cocoa. We also have kava dark chocolate. We also have a vegan kava chocolate. So we've got a kava root tea that's 100% kava, just in a tea bag, unbleached.
Kava's reputation took a hit from research which led to a ban on kava products in Europe in 2002 that was subsequently overturned. However, Pacific academics say that in a bid to remove poisonous elements of the crop, kava had been stripped of all its beneficial and raw qualities while being made into a largely synthetic chemical product. Now kava producing countries are focusing more on exporting high quality strains of kava. Tongan academic and scholar Dr. Okusitino Mahina says many indigenous communities have consumed kava for centuries with no untoward effects. He says more in-depth research is needed.
The whole kava issue has been compounded in multiple ways, and we need to distinguish between different layers and how they come together to constitute the pros and cons in connection with kava. That can be done through research.
Postdoctoral researcher Apo Aporosa says more youth are interested in kava now.
In Fiji, for instance, you know, where I'm from, where I'm speaking to people from home, is that a lot of the young people there who were formerly sitting around and probably some of them not doing a lot, but now, you know, they can see an economic advantage in the price of kava, you know, considering it's $100, you know, kg Fijian, where, you know, a couple of years ago it was a fraction of that.
Kaloa Hau urges support for Pacific markets and growers to manufacture new kava products to the world. He also hopes that an institute focusing solely on kava research can be established. This is Saravui Talatu.
And with that, we've come to the end of this edition of Focus Asia Pacific from PCJ Radio International. If you want to contact us to let us know what you think of the program, we'd love to hear from you. Our email address is very simple. It's focus@pcjmedia.com. Once again, focus@pcjmedia.com. Also, just a quick reminder that in just over a week's time, we're going to be launching a new website. That's right, not just for this program, but also for PCJ Radio International. If you go to our website now, pcjmedia.com, you'll see a link there on the PCJ logo, which will bring you to the program bank for this program and the other programs that we produce. So, coming up very soon, a new link for Focus Asia Pacific. Anyway, that's all we have time for this week. And also, listeners in the Pacific may know that there's also a 3x daily program that goes out on shortwave and, of course, is rebroadcast through our partner stations. But this, of course, is the international edition. Anyway, that's all we have time for. We'll see you again very soon. Bye-bye.